what do you call it, pulpening. So if you have a pulpening in the next big pulp, actually, it's the next big story, because apparently, according to him, not only does it have the longest patent battle in history,
right,
which is now been going on for 30 years, no doubt. But also, apparently, it's got, you know, love affairs and murder and all sorts of other things involved. I don't quite know how would they come into it. But apparently, he thinks it's so gripping that he would not only like to write it as a history, but also sort of make it into a novel.
Is he still working for Exxon?
Yes, he's just publishable on Scaling Up.
Where does he work in
Exxon? I don't quite know what he sort of. He's basically come about publicity. He worked in. I'm not quite sure. I think it's some sort of research coordinator.
Well, so Kant was right. Yeah. Well, I gather from Kant that this year had already published a book when he was in Washington.
Who? Bisio.
Yeah, Bisio.
No, well, this book is due to come out about the synthetic lover project.
So this is something new that he's doing.
Yeah, he's been working on it for 10 years.
Okay.
He did it with another gentleman who I don't know at all. And I've never really quite worked out how he fits into all this. Vernon Herbert.
He used to work for me.
Did he?
Vernon Herbert did.
Vernon Herbert's name figures in all this, but having met Dr. Bisio, I rather gather it's mainly Dr. Bisio's idea.
Well, neither of them were involved in synthetic rubber.
No, no, no.
As far as I know. Maybe Bisio was, but Vernon Herbert was.
No, well, Bisio didn't know it enough.
That's interesting. Small world, isn't it?
Yeah. Matter of fact, to be
Okay, we're back on.
Where were we? We're talking about the strange greatness, you will find that very interesting. There's just one last thing on the particular side, on the particular query, and that is about fears. You mentioned at the very end of your memoir that you were afraid that the lack of innovation in Exxon were going to lead to problems in years to come. That was nearly 10 years ago. To what extent have your gloomy predictions come true?
Well, I haven't seen any startling things come out of Exxon research. Have you, Bill?
No. No, I haven't.
On the other hand, could that not be related to a dark or exciting thing coming out of many chemical companies these days?
Could well be.
I don't think that DuPont has really come up with anything that was going to set the world on fire.
Well, I can't think of any new thing in recent years.
No. Outside the pharmaceutical field, I think there are some drugs.
Yeah.
Okay. But outside the pharmaceutical field, I can't. I mean, I'm writing a book called Polymer Pioneers, which are going to deal with 12 people. That is to say, Hyatt, Ferroloid, Berthelot, who was a French chemist, but he said something about polymer. Pickles, who you may have never heard of, but Samuel Pickles, he was the first person to suggest that rubber might be a train molecule rather than a ring. Bakerland, of course. Then Carruthers, Marble.
Of DuPont.
Yeah, Carruthers of DuPont.
Uh-huh.
And Marble, Carl Marble.
Yeah, I know him.
He's still alive.
Yes. And then Staudinger and Mark. Fleury and Kuhn, Bernard Kuhn, a Swiss chemist. And Diegel and Natter. And at the very end, they were going to write a bit at the end saying, look at the exciting things that are happening in polymer chemistry today, and then a rather fiddled out that most of the exciting things I could think of in the last 5 years would be impossible to explain to anyone without knowledge of chemistry.
Well, that's like music.
Yeah.
The best music was written 150 right. years ago, 200 mm. years ago.
Right.
I don't know of very much music that's been written in the last 86 years that is worth much.
Mm.
That's my opinion.
What about personally, I would agree with you. I mean, I would feel that the last notable composer Well, Bruckner, but...
Bruckner, yeah.
Or Brahm. Brahm died just after Bruckner.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you feel that, to some extent, your predictions were right, in the sense that you feel that Exxon has
failed.
Well,
I really don't know much except what I read in the press.
Yeah.
Well, I get their magazines, but I don't read much that's new.
No. I mean, both of you are people who have worked in innovation in the chemical industry.
Yeah.
Had a lot to do with innovation in the chemical industry. How do you feel? I mean, do you feel that, do you sort of ever feel baffled that nothing is happening these days? I mean, that you feel that you've lived through a period that saw all kinds of new products, like synthetic rubber, low-density polyethylene, and so forth, and you feel that, you know, that momentum hasn't been kept up?
Well, I don't worry too much about it. I know that Cliff Garvin has plenty of worries these days.
Yeah.
About the future of the petroleum business.
Yeah.
And for Exxon, that's the main thing.
Yeah, quite obviously, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
what are these fears now about where they're going to get it from next? Or something?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Mm-hmm. Well, just look at Exxon, as you see in the papers, Exxon is buying back stock.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Buying its own stock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It means it doesn't have enough new projects to
depend on
the money on the way it used to.
Right. And also, in the case of Exxon, I would hardly imagine, I mean, I know a lot of companies are buying up stock to prevent rapid, you know, to prevent sort of raiders. But I mean, I hardly imagine that T-Boom...
They're just copying Exxon, most of them.
But I mean, I can't imagine that T-Boom picking can imagine that he can take
the other thing Exxon. Is that... The petroleum end of the business is not expanding. In fact, it's being contracted.
Right, yeah.
And refineries are shutting down. We're shutting down big refineries in Hamburg, in...
the one in South America, isn't it?
The one in South America. Yes, the one that's Aruba.
Aruba,
that's one of the biggest ones.
And one of the oldest ones, too. It's been going for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And as a result... we don't have the oil companies generally don't have the incentive to build to develop new petroleum processes because
right.
They're shrinking back.
There's several different things. I mean, if we're talking about petroleum in particular, there's really several different things here. But namely, that such is the success of the processes developed in the 30s and 40s, that you can hardly get any more gasoline out of petroleum even if you wanted to. I mean, would that not be? And secondly, that no one had any success at that anyway, which is perhaps not surprising. And thirdly, of course, it's becoming less petroleum to use anyhow. I mean, what is the flow of petroleum these days? I mean, my impression is, and I'm not an expert on this, my impression is that there is a lack of the number of proven resources of petroleum are shrinking very rapidly. Is that right? I mean, in other words, there's a whole block of petroleum out there, so to speak, which is speculative. I mean, what people think might be there.
Yeah.
But less and less of it has actually been turned into real known petroleum.
Well, there's a lot of it in the Middle East. But who's going to control it 20 years from now?
Hmm? Even the Middle East, I think it's running down, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's running down too. But that's really the big problem of the petroleum industry, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where are we going to get gasoline from 20 years from now?
Even if it's
or what could a substitute be?
Right.
Hard to think of a substitute.
Do you think the problem is going to be as near as that? It's going to be, 20 years.
Well, I don't know.
By that one time, about 10 years ago, everybody was mentioning 2000, the year 2000, the doom date. But my impression was it had been put off a few years since. But, partly due to fall in consumption. But, I was just wondering whether there were any sort of, I think we're pretty well cover most things, but it was just, I suppose, two things we haven't covered. That is the question to do with the growth of petrochemicals, because we haven't talked a lot about petrochemicals. Well, we have, we've touched upon it. But is there anything particular about the sort of the growth of petroleum-based chemicals between about, say, 1930 and 1960 that people have not tended to discuss?
Well, one would think that maybe there'll be a tendency to go to coal as a raw material,
right,
for chemicals,
mm-hmm,
like it was in the 30s and 20s.
In other words, that you're saying that maybe in 100 years' time, 200 years' time, the petrochemical industry will be seen as some kind of bizarre interlude between...
Yeah, I think it'll be much sooner than that.
Huh?
Much sooner than that.
Of course, it's made it all sorts of problems, because, I mean, take the whole syn fuel question, the question of synthetic fuel, but when you had an oil crisis, the government said we're going to spend lots of money, much of money on synthetic fuel, but now, you know, the price of oil has fallen rapidly. The government, you know, from its own logical but short-term perspective, says, well, that wasn't a very good idea, so we'll forget about that. Yet, you know, what I'm really trying to say is that you can't keep setting up and shutting down a syn fuel industry every 5 years or so.
Well, you can't.
Huh?
You can't.
So,
well, Exxon's got a new process they developed at Baytown for liquefying coal.
Yeah.
They've got a new process for that.
Mm.
And it was run on a pilot plant, large demonstration plant scale.
Yeah.
It was shut down now.
Mm.
There's no reason to use it right now.
No, it's not. Mm.
But that can be started out.
So, you know, it's on mothballs.
Right? Yeah.
If you must, you know, since you were so heavily involved with hydrogen nation in the 1930s, when the whole fuel crisis started in 1974 or so, you must have, you know, felt a bit like old time. Here we are again.
Deja vu.
That's
right. I remember in the 20s, what is the estimated life of the oil reserves? 7 years?
7 years, yeah.
Something like that, you know.
Yeah.
And then along came the East Texas field in 28.
And then they discovered the Saudi Arabian field in 38. Yeah. So your main argument about the growth of petrochemicals will be that the growth of petrochemicals in a sense is going to seem rather odd in retrospective. That's going to be the main feature of interest, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough field. And they're making these petrochemicals in Arabia now.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. In Tabit, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The feedstock is so damn cheap.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of talk back in the sort of mid-70s how eventually, I think the Shah of Persia, was very fond of making this point, that one day in the not too far future, that the oil producers would have to make sure that the chemical industry got the petroleum rather than the fuel industry. And now we feel that, put it this way, in an unregulated economy, especially the one has in America or Western Europe, but it's going to be very difficult to, even if it were a good idea, to ensure that that happens. But I'm going to put it this way, if petroleum got so expensive that it was no use for the fuel people, it strikes me that the chemical people will probably be trekking back to coal as well.
First, they talk about the price of oil going down
for a while.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I'm not running Exxon.
I say, what about the chemists versus chemical engineers? Because you're both chemical engineers, and yet we've touched upon the fact that Germany didn't have any chemical engineers in the 1930s. What do you see as being the sort of relative role of chemical engineers and chemists in the chemical industry? Do you envision a situation where chemists are going to be more and more restricted in their potential use in the chemical industry, or do you see them
You have to have both.
Yeah.
But I think the tendency now is in the biology field, which certainly takes chemists and all kinds of professionals.
Mm.
But to make those things, you have to have engineers too.
Right. So you think, for one thing, there might be a sort of
good... There'd be a different kind of engineering.
Yeah, bioengineering.
Not smaller scale stuff.
But how different would the task of a bioengineer be from a chemical engineer? I mean, surely, although it may be living things, they're still very much chemical things. Now, I can't see that the task of a bioengineer, for example, is any greater than your problem with butyl.
I don't know. I think there are real problems in that field.
I suppose, anyway. One question I wanted to ask about butyl, and I forgot, was that it strikes me that you were saying that the reaction was instant, and you had to, to even get a feasible reaction, you had to carry it out at very low temperatures. It's surprising to me in a way that there was much research done on a catalyst that might have produced a slower reaction, which would have been more controllable. You know, could have, for example, been carried out at, say, room temperature, and with a reaction time a sufficiently long reaction time that you could actually sort of handle it better.
Well, maybe so, you could discover it.
Well, in fact, I think the Zeger catalyst, can the Zeger catalyst be used to make polyisobutylene?
Polyisobutylene?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean...
It might be.
It might be. It's at...
alkyl aluminum.
I think I have heard that you can't make a very specific group, but of course there is a stereochemistry involved there. You've got a methyl group, nothing like that. Okay. But the point was that strategy, feasible though that strategy may be, that particular strategy was never attempted during the war, or trying to produce a more handleable reaction.
Higher temperature?
A reaction with
aluminum fluoride, didn't we? It'd
be an entirely different polymer.
Yeah.
Everything would be different.
Oh, I see.
Well, you can use boron fluoride. There's other catalysts you can use, but the aluminum fluoride seems to be the simplest.
It takes
so little of it that you don't have to extract it from the product.
Probably an advantage, I suppose probably easier to cool a reaction down than heat it up, in terms of, and then of course it presumably must have been very sterile, been carried out at such low temperatures and at such speed. Presumably it did have a great deal of stereoregularity.
Well,
it does turn out to be mainly stiff, and I can't remember. I read somewhere that
branched, of course.
Even at those low temperatures, they wouldn't have expected
to... I think from isobutylene, it has to be branched.
I think branched in that sense. I thought you mentioned the sense of branched chain. But, okay.
That's what I mean, branched chain.
Okay, well, it's not a major point anyway. I'm sure you're right. I'm just wondering how that relates to what I'm trying to do. Okay, is there anything we feel that we haven't... touch upon?
Do you think you've gotten what you wanted?
Oh yeah, sure, I find it very useful. For one thing, I find it very useful, I find it useful in two things. Obviously, it's always useful to talk to someone who worked on the synthetic rubber project. From our point of view, your work wasn't quite so useful because we were hoping to concentrate on Linden. So, to some extent, it would be more interesting to speak to Vanderbilt or Crony, but nevertheless...
Well, Vanderbilt was a Linden.
He was at Linden too, Vanderbilt.
That's right, that's what I mentioned.
Yeah.
But it was never that very useful, and I found it very interesting, your sound talk.
Well, the fundamental work was done at Linden in those days.
Yeah. It's very, very useful.
Synthetic rubber.
And what I found particularly useful was talking to you about what happened in IG Farben, because I never met anyone outside Germany who had been in close contact with them.
That's right.
And the people The company, of course, having been put on, or the company to her having been put on trial for war crime, everybody in Germany I spoke to about it felt that we could take off now, no problem.